Richard Kemble. The destination, Death Row State Prison. The irony, Richard Kemble is innocent. Proved guilty, what Richard Kemble could not prove was that moments before discovering his murdered wife's body, he saw a one-armed man running from the vicinity of his home. Richard Kemble ponders his fate as he looks at the world for the last time and sees only darkness. But in that darkness, fate moves its huge hand. Barry Morse as Lieutenant Gerard.
All right, and Talking Fugitive, starring Bobby and Kitty and Ken, is on the air, and that's of far greater importance. Hi, everybody. Tonight we're going to be featuring Part 2, Acts 3 and 4 of Escape into Black. And, Bob, is this going to wrap up the, you've covered all of Season 2 then after this?
We have the worst of Season 2 coming up on our next show.
That, you're going to have that, but that's just a, you know, an opinion and a compilation. It's
exactly.
Not an actual, yeah, so you've covered the whole thing.
Right.
All right. Okay. In case you're wondering, folks, who I'm speaking to, that is one of the moderators of the discussion group, Fugitive Views and Reviews, which I actually got the name right. If you want to participate in the discussion, it's 800-407-KSAV or during the program talk at KSAV.org. If you want to contact the host or moderators, fugitive at KSAV.org. All right, for part two, we're ready to go. So, Bob, dare you take it away.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Before I start, I just want to say that Kitty is with us tonight, but she's a little bit under the weather. Her voice isn't very good, coming off a very bad cold, but she's here, and she will check in if and when she can, which gives Ken and I a chance to blabber even more than we normally do. But she is here in the background. I think maybe she'll just review the show tonight instead of talking about The Fugitive. 2 weeks ago, as we concluded our discussion of Part 1, Acts 1 and 2 of Escape in the Black, the one-armed man had just finished calling the police and turning Kimmel in. So as we resume with Acts 3 and 4, we find Margaret Ruskin confronting Dr. Town and finding out that the cops have already called and told him to keep Kimmel in the hospital. They're coming to get him. Margaret is horrified, of course, and already convinced that Kimmel has to be innocent. After a short confrontation with Town, she goes to Kimmel's room and urges him to leave immediately, as she helps him do just that. Kimmel escapes from a basement door and then runs, but this time to an interesting place, the local newspaper, not to be interviewed for an article, but to look in their archives about his trial. That's the one he can't remember. And what follows is quite unusual. First of all, I'm jealous. I wish I could be in the archives the way Kimmel is reading about the trial, because we aren't told anything about it. But this time we get just a little more information. He sits there looking through the trial transcripts, sees a lot of lurid headlines about how the trial was going, as he goes from page to page. And while he's doing this, we hear voices in the background, supposedly of witnesses who testified against him. One of them, a woman, you hear a woman's voice, saying at the trial, quote, "There'd be screaming night after night. I heard her say, 'You want me dead.'" And then a little later she testifies about hearing Helen screaming his name while she was being choked, "Richard, Richard." Then you hear Kimmel in the background saying, "No, it isn't true." Well, I'd like to know where this comes from, because as many times as I've seen this, I've always been confused, and maybe Ken can help me out here. If you remember back to the girl from Little Egypt and the only trial segment we were allowed to see, there was a woman on the stand saying that she used to hear a lot of arguing coming from the Kimmel house. But it's one thing to say that there's a lot of arguing, and there's another thing to say that Helen was being choked and that Kimmel's trying to kill her. I mean, that's quite a leap. So I don't know what this is. Is this a more inconsistency on the part of the producers? Why would a woman make up a story like that? Because to tell you the truth, if that really happened at the trial, it's no wonder that Kimmel got the death sentence. And that woman literally is responsible for everything that happened afterwards. Ken, when you hear that during this sequence in the library, is Kimmel really reading that, or is he just imagining it in his head?
Could be both ways. I think the fact that this series did not really explain the trial and just gave us a little bit here and there and just all over the map, and that crazy woman in Egypt, you know, I think she was a little batty myself. I wouldn't have trusted her as a witness. She may have just heard things that she wanted to hear. I really seriously doubt that Kimball would choke his wife. And
how would she know anyway? How can you tell in an argument you're listening to that somebody's being choked unless you actually can hear their voice, you know, they're being unable to breathe while they're talking? I always wondered how she could hear anything anyway, because they didn't live in an apartment. They lived in a house. The houses were far apart. So, I mean, this woman is really responsible for a lot of what happened, if indeed that's the case.
Yeah, the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney, you know, it would have been nice to have a little bit more of the trial in this series and delete some of these unnecessary episodes that, you know, just had nothing to do, really. And so I am disappointed there. But this episode, Escape into Black, you know, when he does go to the library, it's a little eerie.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, up on our screen captures on the computer, I'm looking at it right now, it has that one scene where all we see is Kimball's hands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
right.
Then he turns the page.
Right.
And we're looking at the expression on Kimball's face.
Right.
And
he's horrified to find out that he may have done this.
I was really into that scene.
Yeah.
I was saying, ooh, this is really good.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Going to maybe some answers of what this series is about.
Wouldn't you just love to be in the library looking through that book?
Oh, yes. And how about Kimball here? You know, David Jansen, his acting ability, there are three episodes, really, that stand out throughout the entire series.
Right.
Obviously, Landscape with Running Figures, that one.
Right.
The End is But the Beginning. And then this episode, Escape into Black.
Right.
David Jansen was really Richard Kimball, you know, in all three of these episodes.
And yeah, I agree. He really sells the part.
You know, he squints his eyes, and you just feel for him, you know.
Well, imagine if it was you, and you believed you had lived some sort of honorable life, and then all of a sudden somebody comes to you and says, take a look at this book. You're a murderer. You're on the run. You don't even realize it. So, yeah, it's his job in this scene to prove that he has amnesia. And to tell you the truth, it's extremely effective. But I just wonder, I mean, I've always been confused by that, because the producers, of course, have no consistency at all anywhere. So I just wondered why one minute I'm seeing a woman simply say, oh, yeah, there was a lot of arguing all the time, and then turn around and say, oh, there wasn't just arguing. He was trying to kill her. He had his hands around her throat. Well, how do you know? I mean, I think if you and I were in the library, we can find enough of things in there to get a new trial. And it's simply ridiculous. Well, after he gets out of the library, he goes, makes a beeline for Dr. Towns' house. I believe he's in his garage. And there's a very interesting confrontation with Dr. Towns. Now, I want to ask about Dr. Towns. What are your feelings about Dr. Towns? You know, from the time the episode begins, Towns is different than every other person that Kimball finds in this series. He manages to talk people onto his side immediately. It's quite remarkable. Towns, however, is different than that. He's really convinced that Kimball killed his wife, and he seems absolutely offended by the fact that a doctor who's supposed to save lives might actually have taken a life. And he goes into a short part about how hard he had to work to become a doctor, obviously an allusion to being African-American and to having to work harder to become a doctor than most people do. And now he's just absolutely turned off by even the thought. And how do you feel about Dr. Towns? Do you think that he's really got it in for Kimball, or he's just one of those by-the-book kinds of guys?
Yeah, real strict guy. He, you know, no nonsense. and he doesn't have the soft heart like Margaret Ruskin does. And that scene in the garage, he urges Kimbo, turn yourself in, and Kimbo's kind of debating back and forth. I like that when Kimbo grabbed him by his suit.
Yes.
You know, and said, I don't have my memory. And then
said, oh, so this is the way it was, huh?
Yeah.
You grabbed your wife like
this. That was unique, really, for the 60s. You really, you know, you're there. What year was this? 1966?
60s, I believe 65.
65, 66. And these two are going back and forth, and you're kind of siding with Town a little bit there. And then you side with Kimball. And then I like that line by Kimball, loan me $20, and Town goes, you know, all right, I'll give it to you. You know, that was a good line. I like that scene.
But what about the lie? What about when Town says to him, turn yourself in, you don't remember that you did it, and nobody is going to send a man to death row who can't remember what he had done. Now, I'm sorry, but I've seen enough trials on TV and read about enough trials to know that that certainly is ridiculous. That's not true at all. If I remember correctly, when you're a defendant in a trial, the judge asks you if you understand the charges against you, gives you a chance to plead guilty or not guilty, and I think if you just stand there and say, I don't know what to do, I don't remember doing anything, I don't know if I'm guilty or not guilty, the court will enter a not guilty plea for you just to give you the benefit of the doubt. Am I right about that?
Yes, I've seen other shows that have dealt with that. I don't know where Town got that impression, and I don't know about Kimball himself, you know, kind of believing that.
Yeah.
But that was a little odd the way Town put that. You know, if you turn yourself in, they won't execute a man who does not know what he has done.
Yes. Imagine what we would be faced with in the criminal justice system. If that were the case, you'd have everybody in jail going, I don't remember a thing. You can't possibly execute me. I don't even know what you're talking about. Everybody would be using that. So obviously that's impossible. And it's not until Kimball talks to Margaret Ruskin that she says, you know, that's not true. And she berates the town for telling him that. How could you lie to him and tell them that he's going to get a hearing simply because he has amnesia? So Kimball really walked right into that. And it really, that was a surprise because, of course, you have to take into account that his head isn't quite right at the moment, and that's something to consider. But I was quite surprised by that. But this, from the time that this episode begins, don't you find it quite unusual to finally see a character who doesn't buy into Kimball's story? We've seen, I mean, when Kimball first meets, he's met a lot of people who at the beginning just figure he's guilty. Some want to turn him in, some do. But he's very, you know, he's got this great ability to say, I didn't do it, and give the short or the long version of his story. But here's a guy who won't buy an image. I mean, literally, Town never gives him a break on this, and actually seems to be offended. It's like, I had to work hard to become a doctor. I'm saving lives, and you have the colossal gall to come along and kill your wife and make the whole thing into a joke. And so he's perfectly willing, you know, even when the police call him and say, keep him in the hospital, we're coming to get him, that he's going to do just that. And back at the beginning of the episode, when Kimball first gets into the hospital and he doesn't know anything, I mean, who ever heard of a doctor taking the time out like he does to, he's got to get to the truth. We're going to get to the truth and find out why in the world would a doctor be running around the country if he hadn't done something wrong.
All right, we're gonna get to the truth in the other half of on the other side of this quick timeout. And I'll tell you, Kitty has never sounded better. This has been some of her most intelligent. I'm impressed with this. Quick timeout here. We'll come back and be discussing Act 4 of Escape in the Black when we continue talking Fugitive on Retro Radio.
This Christmas, give the gift that lasts all year. Tell your friends and family about KSAV and how to find us. Besides in-depth discussions of The Fugitive, KSAV offers great programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The retro radio format plays the music of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, interspersed with old-time radio programs, retro commercials, and the memories of radio stations of the past. The fun and laughter of sidewalks of San Francisco, the nostalgia of Perfectly Frank, the guests and audience interaction of talk and television with Dave White means there is definitely something for everyone. Giving the gift of KSAV means no hassles with parking, returns, or exchanges. One size fits all, and the best part of it is it's free. KSAV, the enjoyment of Christmas Day every day of the year.
That KSAV sounds good, the gift of KSAV. And I like that last part, it's free. Okay, we're back, and talking about free, we're having a freewheeling discussion, and ready to pick up getting to the truth. Once again, here's Bob Dare.
Thanks, Dave. Escape into Black is not just a fugitive classic, but in my opinion, it's an all-time classic TV episode. And it's episodes like this that have created a TV series that still lives on in our memories four decades later. But I always say you cannot really appreciate what is incredibly good unless you can also recognize what is incredibly bad. And when we return on December 18th, we will do just that. Look at some of the very worst of the best. And that includes the most infamous one of them all, called Fun and Games and Party Favors, in which Kimball comes up against his most dangerous enemy ever, a group of spoiled brat college students who go into a frenzy of dancing and breaking furniture. Yes, you have to hear it to believe it. Why it's so bad? It's absolutely good. 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. The Fugitive Views and Reviews Volume 3, Season 3 is now available just in time for Christmas at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other internet booksellers. Buy one, leave it along with a stiff drink, of course, right near the fireplace, so when Santa comes to visit you, he can take a break on Christmas Eve and catch up on his reading before he resumes his rounds.
What happened to the milk and cookies?
No, leave a stiff drink. It's going to be cold out. And okay. If with any luck, he'll leave you a present, and that'll be volumes 1 and 2 of the Fugitive Views and Reviews, also available at internet booksellers. He'll appreciate it, and so will we. Back to Escape into Black after leaving the library. We've already done that part about him going to visit Dr. Town. He leaves Dr. Town. They have this confrontation. Very interesting. Great dialogue, too, there. Town convinces him, you got to turn yourself in. And he tells him, as a matter of fact, that he'll probably kill himself if he continues to run around the country believing that he didn't do anything. I mean, this is some of the most bizarre advice I've ever heard in my entire life. Kimmel's completely excused, so of course, confused, and so he buys into it. What we see next is, in my opinion, the most startling scene of the entire series. Now, we talked about the one-armed man calling the police and turning Kimmel in the first part of Escape into Black. That was amazing enough, and Ken has said this on our last show, he was really shocked. But I wonder how shocked Ken was to see Richard Kimmel, first of all, Town takes him to the train station so that he can turn himself into Gerard. Kimmel walks up to a payphone and calls Gerard and tells him, I'm turning myself into you. Now, somebody's got to be kidding me. This is absolutely playing around with the very premise of the series, because if there's one thing I would lay my own life down on, is that Kimmel will never turn himself in. Not in a million years. He will run until he's dead. It's made that very clear. There's no possibility he will ever give up. And here he is telling Gerard that he's turning himself in. That people tell him he's done something wrong. He doesn't know. He's not sure what it is. But that if he turns himself in, he'll get a break. Oh, sure he will. Gerard's on the other end of the phone and absolutely is incredulous. He thinks the whole thing is a joke. Ken, I think you'll agree, this is the scene you never figured you'd ever see in this series.
Totally unexpected. I don't know about you when you were watching the episode, but this just came totally out of the blue.
Yes.
And we have a scene. He goes to the payphone, and the way David Jansen acted the scene is just tremendous. It really is. He's real low-key, right?
Yeah.
He's real gentle.
Right.
He's not tough. He's not I don't know what the right word to use is, kind of calm.
Right.
And he says, let me talk to Lieutenant Gerard, and Gerard's on the other end, and you got Carpenter there,
right.
Gerard's boss, and tremendous acting by Barry Morris, too. I mean, I wonder how they did that, when he's in the office at his desk. I wonder if Kimball and Gerard were actually talking to each other, or, you know, when they had to act out the scene.
Well, they usually don't do it that way. It's hard to tell.
But Barry Morris, he goes, "What is this? Is this a joke?" And then Kimball, he responds, I don't know what's going on. I've kind of lost some memory. I'm coming in. I'm in Decatur, and I'm going to be on this train." And Gerard, they try to trace it, and Gerard's trying to keep him on the phone. I mean, this you know, we should have a show on the top 10 moments in the Fugitive series, and this has to rate way up there.
Oh yeah,
really.
And after Kimball hangs up, he says to Carpenter, Gerard says to Carpenter, "He wants me to come and get him. Well, I'll come to get him, all right." No kidding. He wants me to come and get him? No problem. I'll come and get him. I mean, it's astounding, really, to see that. I love it, scenes like that in a series, especially a long-running series, because they dare to turn the whole series on its head by simply saying, "Oh, you don't think it's possible he'll ever turn himself in? Well, guess what? He's going to do it." I mean, I'm jumping out of my chair. I can't even believe it's happening. To me, those are scenes that are simply priceless, because I like to be shocked. I like to be fooled. I like to see something I never dreamed I would see. Well, and so Kimball hangs up, and I think this is a very spooky scene here. I don't know about you, but the train, knows how the train is pulling slowly out of the station, very, very slowly, and you hear this very threatening music in the background,
yeah.
And Kimball's getting on the train, and all of a sudden Margaret Ruskin shows up, and she's trying to save him. He gets on first, and then she gets on, and it's a very frightening scene, because we're back on the train again where we were at the beginning,
yep.
And Kimball's going back to death row. It's absolutely incredible. Now,
you forgot to mention something, that
what?
Margaret Ruskin, out of all the fugitive women, you know, in this show, Margaret is the only one that landed on one of our books, right? Her photo?
She's on the cover, that's right.
Volume 2, she's right on the cover, and this train scene is right there. Also, I need to mention that Margaret Ruskin is on my Wall of Fame.
Of course.
Just for those people who didn't know. But what do you think about this train scene? I
think it's absolutely a great scene. It's done the way Hitchcock would have done it, with a great deal of suspense. It's
yeah.
Very, very slow. It's almost in slow motion. There's a very little light music in the background that keeps on increasing. Kimball sits for a while. He's looking out the window the way he was in the at the beginning of the series. She's going from car to car trying to find him. Then, just as she's getting to his car, he decides to go in the bathroom to put water on his face. And then he goes back and sits down, looks out the window, and all of a sudden we're back at the beginning of the series where he's sitting next to Gerard, and there's a train crash again. It's absolutely incredible. And who's sitting next to him but Margaret Ruskin? She finally finds him.
Yeah.
And convinces him that that there really is a one-armed man. And I know this means a lot to you. You said to me in private, there's some great one-liners in this,
oh, yeah.
in this series. And she gives him one of those great one-liners about seeing finding the one-armed man. What does she tell him?
Well, Kimball, he has a little flashback or whatever.
Right.
And he goes, yeah, I saw him running from my house. And then Margaret Ruskin has a classic line. She goes, "I saw him too."
Right.
And right there nailed the whole episode. Right there. And then
right.
Kimball, and then we have the scene, right? They both
right.
stand
oh, we got to go back to the flashback, yeah.
Well, no, then they both stand up, and then Margaret sees Gerard in the window, and then Kimball sees him. And, you know, as the audience, you're on the edge of your seat, right? What's
oh, yeah.
going to happen?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely incredible. That's the part that's on our book cover. And she does a good job. She stands in his way just long enough
yeah.
so that Kimball can escape. He goes between the cars, and he immediately jumps off the train. Doesn't wait for a second. Simply jumps off the moving train, tumbles down the hill, and Gerard can do nothing because the train's moving so fast. Gerard makes a big mistake by not having the train stopped when he got on. That was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And so Gerard might as well not bother to jump off. It's too late now. And you see Kimmel afterwards as the train speeds by, Kimmel running down the road, a very effective scene that says a lot about what it's like to be hunted and to be so exhausted that you can barely run down the road. Now, I got to skip ahead here because we've only got a couple of minutes, and I promised this to Kitty. After we have this exciting train scene and Kimmel's escape, we have a very interesting epilogue. Kimmel gets away, and he calls up Margaret Ruskin simply to tell her that he did survive. And, of course, we've seen her cry before in this episode, and she's already very emotional the minute she picks up the telephone. I know that Kitty likes this episode as much as I do, but Margaret Ruskin tells him, she doesn't tell him, I don't know if she tells him or not, but she did find, of course, the right one-armed man. Kitty took a half a point off her rating and made it 9.5 instead of 10. Kitty, why did you feel you had to do that?
Because Margaret Ruskin never bothered to tell him what the one-armed man's name was. Doesn't that seem like a logical thing to do? You'd think she would have said, and by the way, this is a pretty common name, so I don't even know if this is his real name, but the name was Fred Johnson. So at least that gives you some kind of a starting point.
Well,
I'm interested in knowing what the name of the guy is.
Okay, but the only reason I didn't take any points off
of
that.
If it were me and someone said, I saw him, and I'd be like, really? Well, what's his name? Who is he?
But Kimmel is not completely back yet. He even tells her on the phone, I'm still a little confused. Some things are coming back, not all of it.
And for that reason, Margaret should have had the good horse sense to say, well, let me tell you what his name is.
Well, I think they didn't do it. I'll tell you why I think they didn't do it. Because this scene is played for emotion only. It really has nothing to do with the story. And you can ask Ken that, Ken, because I think in your review, you even mentioned that it brought tears to your eyes, did you not?
Yeah, the last scene, Margaret's on the phone and Kimbo's on the other side. And you know what? I think this is the only time, really, in an epilogue that we have seen Kimbo.
Well, one minute.
Yeah, we... The only time in the series that I can remember that Kimball calls someone back to let him know that he made it and he
I
was
think you're
okay.
Right.
He didn't do that with Amy in just but the beginning.
No.
And then she had a tear in her eye. You know what? I kind of welled up a little bit.
Oh, so did I. So I think this is really playful. I do agree with Kitty though that he would have benefited by knowing his name. No question about that. But it's an emotional scene. And Kimmel's not right yet. He may not even remember the name. And as Kitty said herself, you know, it's such a common name. I don't even know if it's his real name. I mean, anybody can say they're Fred Johnson. So I don't know that it would have done him any good. But
that
would have
been a good way to end the episode. You know, Fred Johnson and Kimmel walks away. Fred Johnson. Fred Johnson.
Yeah, that would have been good. I like that.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. Well, he doesn't know it. He doesn't, of course, find out about it until we get the wife killer. I don't know if they really would have done him any good. I like the emotional aspect of it more than that. I'm with you. It's hard not to cry because she's crying. She's all right,
and I'm sure everybody is crying because we've run out of time when we get. So that is it for season two. In 2 weeks, return and you'll hear the opinions of the worst of season two. And in fact, for the audience, tell us what your opinion of the worst of season two was. You've heard them all described now. So, Kitty, I hope you recover so you can tell me off for insulting you when you're back in 2 weeks. And everybody else, stay tuned for Talking Television tonight. It's going to be the Brady Bunch and Peter Brady himself, Christopher Knight, is going to be the special guest. See you in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot to everybody. Stick around here on Retro Radio.